While an idea can appear to be a positive on the surface, it could wind up, in fact, being a negative, which could impact the people it was claimed to be there to help in the first place. Example of this is the desire for large increases in the minimum wage, which the New Jersey legislature has passed and sent to Governor Christie, who is expected to veto it. That increases in addition to the cost of running a business at all levels, which some may not be able to afford. Here to share some of the details of this impact is the research director with the Employment Policies Institute, Michael Saltzman. Thanks for being here today, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And it is epionline.org, epionline.org for the Employment Policies Institute. The mechanics of what was passed, the measure would raise the minimum wage from $8.38 current to $10.10 on January 1st, 2017. Then over the course of the next 4 years by more than $1.25 an hour. And after 2021, the wage floor would increase annually based on changes in the Consumer Price Index. So, like I said in the introduction, Michael, superficially, sounds like a great thing for the workers, it benefits, more money, better for the economy, so some people are presenting it as. What is wrong with that belief?
Well, I think it's the question is where does the money come from? And I think if consumers were always willing to pay higher prices, we wouldn't be having a debate about the minimum wage, because anytime the minimum wage was increased, you know, prices would go up and everyone would go on about their business. But it's because consumers are sensitive to higher prices that businesses have to make difficult adjustments. Already in response to New Jersey going to an $8.25 minimum wage, you know, you have seasonal businesses like, you know, Maurice Pierce, for instance, that have had to pretty significantly reduce the number of young people that they hire over the summers because they just can't raise their prices that much. Going to $15 is going to present a whole new group of challenges, because really you're talking about a minimum wage level that's unprecedented in the history of U.S. minimum wages.
I know there's been places like San Francisco, and I believe Seattle's done it. Have we seen any ebb and flow out of those situations yet?
Yeah, so you know, we launched a website called Faces of 15, where we actually started tracking the stories in these cities of what's happened. So when San Francisco, which is phasing into a $15 minimum wage, it's currently $12.25. When San Francisco made this change, you know, you had successful restaurants in the city that otherwise were doing well that actually had to close down because of the higher wage level. You know, you had bookstores, you know, across the Bay in Oakland. You had child care providers, grocery stores, all of whom are not open today or were struggling for a while because of this higher wage requirement. And so I think even in these higher cost markets, an unrealistic minimum wage generates significant consequences. And so I think what New Jersey policymakers need to be concerned about is what happens in a harder hit New Jersey community when you decide to go to a $15 minimum wage. What does that do for the young people there? I mean, I think the answer is pretty obvious.
And there was a report done, too, which shows that the greatest areas of job losses would in New Jersey at a $15 minimum wage would be retail, trade, and the food service industry, which are in at least the north and the southern part of the state, the biggest employers.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that we actually asked two economists to sort of look at this question for us and to basically kind of play it straight. I mean, we asked them to use the same methodology that was developed by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. And following that approach, they conservatively estimate that about 33,000 jobs would be lost in the state by the time this policy is fully phased in. It's going to hit people who are younger and less educated the hardest. It's going to hit the retail and accommodations industry the hardest. And so the question for policymakers becomes, what is the outlet for these young people now? I mean, you have a situation right now in the country where 1 in 6 young men is either in jail or unemployed. So when they lose the employer of last resort, when they lose that outlet to still go find the skills that they need to work their way up the career ladder, are we creating a new lost generation of young people who don't have any opportunities anymore? What happens to those folks?
Well, Michael Saltzman, who is the research director of the Employment Policies Institute, epionline.org, is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Is it a mistake, Michael, to look at the minimum wage, as many people do, unfortunately, as the career wage? There's a reason why it's called a starting salary, isn't it?
That's right. I think we get bogged down in this debate sometime by looking at the age of people who earn the minimum wage. But I think the important characteristic is that it's a starter wage. And I think we don't want to create a situation where there are fewer starter wage jobs available. If we want to have a discussion about the best way to reduce poverty and hardship for the relatively small number of people who work those jobs and who are single parents with children, there are better policies to accomplish that won't put their jobs at risk. But when we start talking about creating a minimum wage that's sufficient to, let's say, support a family of four, we've created a situation, if customers won't pay for it, where anyone whose skills don't justify that wage is going to find themselves out of work. And I think that's a pretty irrefutable argument. I mean, at lower minimum wage levels, you have some debate among economists about whether the costs outweigh the benefits. At a $15 minimum wage, there really isn't a lot of debate. You know, even left-of-center economists acknowledge that some policy like this is going to be very disruptive and devastating for the labor market.
Looking at that structure, too, from $10.10 to then $1.25 an hour till it gets to the $15 range, this is more maybe a combination of psychological and economical for the business owner. Won't the what about me factor come into play? Because here I am, I've been in this job for 8 years. I started at the old minimum wage of $8.38 an hour, and I've worked my way up to the $15. All of a sudden, here comes Ethel. She's going to march right in and start at what it took me 6 years to get to.
I think it's a very real concern. In fact, the Wall Street Journal did an article about that in California earlier this year, basically looking at that exact dynamic playing out in businesses. As the wage goes up, you have more senior employees who are asking, hey, why is the new person earning the same wage that I have, that I've worked up to earn? You know, we did a survey of employees who were earning kind of in that higher wage range and asked them, you know, what they thought about it. And, you know, they were kind of divided, actually. Surprisingly, you know, you'd think, well, a minimum wage increase, they'd like that. But they were actually divided on the idea of lower paid new employees receiving the same wage they earned. Almost all of them said, hey, if that new employee comes in and is getting that kind of raise, I expect to get an equally generous raise myself. I think a lot of them are probably going to have a rude awakening when they realize that, an employer doesn't have the money to barely has the money to fund the raise at the bottom, much less fund the raise further up the wage scale for their other employees.
And especially considering how a lot of the job loss potentials are in areas like retail and service, there's an aspect of those two industries that can be greatly utilized by those two industries. It's called automation.
That's correct. And so I think you've already seen a lot of companies at even lower minimum wage levels and in response to policies like the Affordable Care Act have embraced automation, whether you're talking about McDonald's, you know, or Panera or any number of other number of chains who we've seen go to tablets. Full service restaurants, you've even seen tablets on the tables now, places like Chili's, where you place your appetizer order on a tablet instead of with a server. These changes can be accelerated. I think the other thing we need to be aware of, too, is increasingly there's very little limit on the number of jobs that can be automated. You know, now there are jobs in the back of the house, you know, making burgers and things like that can be automated. And so I think we can push these low-margin employers to a place where their only option, the only way they can still provide the low prices that consumers demanding, is to replace employees with computers.
Well, as I said in the introduction, what appears to be a good idea superficially when you get into the mechanics of it, it is going to place a bullseye on the people it is designed or at least presented to be there to be helpful for. And to learn more about this issue and the rest of the points of focus of the Employment Policies Institute, you can visit their website, epionline.org. We've been joined by their research director, Michael Saltzman. Michael, thanks for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.